In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xennial. But what is a Xennial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xennial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And it's been an interesting day, I will say that. We've had a couple of interesting conversations before we even started the podcast. I know at least one of the conversations, Mike was saying, damn, I wish we were already rolling.
But that's okay.
That's okay. We'll actually try to recreate a portion of that conversation for a later podcast.
Yeah.
But today we're doing something a little bit different. We're trying to kind of change up the format a little, get something a little more fresh. Instead of just talking about, you know, various things that, well, recently we've had a lot of conversations, we've also been talking about some newsworthy items, but many of them that aren't currently news. They're stuff that's happened in the past, right? Mm-hmm. Some education of people and stuff. We're going to try to do a few things more on current news, current events, current things going on.
Yeah, we kind of want to do a little bit of a...
Topical?
Yeah, be a little more topical, do a bit of a review on things that may have happened that may be pertinent to us, our upbringing, our past, nostalgia stuff, that kind of thing, you know? Stuff
that we've experienced in general.
Yeah.
So we're going to get started with a few different news items. I know there's one specific news item that's been dominating my weekend.
Yeah.
That we will talk about in the second half of the podcast. Obviously, the NFL season has started.
Mm-hmm.
I am a huge, huge, huge football fan.
Mm-hmm.
I watch the games religiously. The channel that when my wife is not controlling the TV, which she does 90% of the time,
mm-hmm.
the channel that I put everything on is NFL Network. And I'm just constantly watching NFL Network, everything on NFL Network. So if she's not binge watching whatever TV show she's deciding to binge watch again, it's on NFL Network and I'm watching some kind of sports casting program about football. So what we'll be talking about in the second half is the antics of former wide receiver Antonio Brown.
Oh boy.
And how much he's been in the news lately.
Yeah, I'm very casually, like, I don't even casually know a lot of information about the guy aside from stuff that showed up in the headlines more recently, and we'll get to that.
Yeah, and I'm going to get to kind of a whole retrospective of what's happened in the last year or so with him.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of led up to all of this happening.
Yeah, I've had a couple of friends tell me about what was going on. Let's get to that a little bit later. We've got some other stuff to kind of go through and kind of give a bit of a time period, you know, a bit of a time period based. You know, current events kind of a thing. Yeah. Stuff that's happened more recently.
You had something about let's start with your first thing. You had something about the Carters.
Oh yeah, okay. I was gonna get to that afterwards. We have a few other things too. Let me get to this first. We do have a lot of a pretty decent number of celebrity deaths.
Oh, you're gonna go with the deaths first. Okay,
I'm gonna go with those because it's kind of like a bit of a list. It's a lot of big stuff. I actually just played an acoustic show this last weekend.
Yes, sadly I wasn't able to make it out to it, but I saw the videos that were posted online for it. Some great stuff.
Yeah.
It was nice. Looked like you had a lot of fun.
I did. I had a lot of fun.
Out of curiosity, I'm going to do a name drop. I couldn't completely understand what Carl was singing. The recording was bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the recording was not good enough.
He was singing Asshole by Dennis Leary.
Okay, that's what I thought it was, but yeah. I really couldn't understand the lyrics. The music sounded right, but I couldn't understand the lyrics.
Yeah.
That makes total sense for Carl to be singing. Total sense.
Yeah, absolutely. We used to do that song way back in the day, and so this is it was kind of a big thing for me, too, because I was it's the first time I had ever done an acoustic set essentially by myself. He came on to guest up to kind of end everything, but I did kind of like a long list of songs.
It was about
45 minute set, nine songs.
So Sammy wasn't singing with you?
Not for the first set that I played.
Okay, so it was your set
by
yourself.
Yeah,
first.
We did. Okay. Yeah, I did a set with my buddy Sammy Carlin. He used to be in a local band around here called Fall Rise. They eventually became another band called Dark Signal. He's moved on from that, but he's kind of got his own acoustic stuff that he's doing. Good guy. Got a lot of good work ethic. Great at business too. Just like he's a good singer, man.
Exceptionally muscular.
That guy's super into fitness.
Yeah, he's exceptionally muscular.
He's super into fitness. And you know what, man? He's in good condition. Plus, he's in good shape.
He's one of those guys with the completely bald head that literally has like a perfectly shaped head. He does. It's like perfectly shaped. There's no like I got like a big fat roll in the back of my head when it's shaved. He's got like the perfectly rounded shaped head. You just kind of want to rub it.
I'm assuming this is a compliment. I'm not sure. No,
it is. It is very much a compliment. He totally rocks the shaved head.
Yeah,
the
completely shaved head. He does it.
And not in a bad way. He really looks good with it.
He looks good with a bald head, man.
Yeah.
Basically, getting to it, this is normally in my situations, especially live, I had never before this done a show or a set where I played completely by myself.
You always had at least somebody up there
with a band. At least one other person. Yeah. Like Carl, who sang with me, he had done a full set with me before when I had done an acoustic set. Yeah. I've done an acoustic set of a few of them with him, but every other time I've always had a band.
Yeah,
to play, on stage with me, and it was a total different experience.
I can relate to that. I've done monologues before where it's just me up on stage. You know, so, hell, I've had monologues in plays where I'm alone on the stage doing things for 4 or 5 minutes. And I mean, it's only a small amount in comparison to 45 minutes worth of a set. But the difference between being the only focus on stage and being the only thing that's trying to get people's attention, as opposed to having a group of people around me and working with me.
Yeah.
Totally different focus. It's a totally different energy, a different feel to it.
It is.
And you really have to approach both in a different way.
Yeah. But, especially when you finish a song, like I'm still trying to kind of get, figure out, things about my stage presence and stuff in between songs. That's the thing.
Well,
you finish a song and people applaud and then they're waiting for the next song. You got a tune. You're like, what am I going to say while I'm concentrating on tuning my guitar? Like, what am I going to do? It's a lot of stuff that you think about. The front men and lead singers and that kind of stuff, especially when
they take care of those things. Yeah.
Yeah. They take care of it. There's a guiding to the flow of the entire stage show. And you really don't fully get how important it is to have all that information much you're taken care of until you're up on stage actually doing it.
Well, another thing that I would think would be a interesting thing to have with just doing your own set just by yourself. Mm-hmm. When you're done with the song, right? You're done with one song. You're getting ready for the next song. You kind of look over at your bandmates, and you can get the look from your bandmates. Like, yeah, this is rocking. This is cool. We can share this. This come out good. When you're by yourself, you're just looking at the crowd. And are they applauding because I'm good? Or are they applauding because like I'm pathetic and they just want to make me feel good about myself? You don't have that moment of shared with somebody that's there doing it with you. Like, yeah, man, this was awesome. That look to somebody. You can look over at your buddy and be like, that was good, right? And both you have that look in your eye of like, this rocked.
Yeah, we nailed
it.
You
feel good.
Yeah, you don't get that when you're by yourself. You definitely are kind of wondering about a lot of that stuff.
I can say again, relating back to my experience in theater, and again my recent experience in theater.
Yeah.
There were times I'd come off stage and I wouldn't see anybody, so I couldn't see a response to whether anything was good or not. And I'd be like, crap, was that a good, did I hit the monologue okay? Did it come out all right? And then there were other times where I had people waiting behind going like, oh yeah, nodding at me going, oh yeah, that was good. That was good. That came off good. Or the best part was when I would have, I would come off stage and I'd have actually people repeating some of the lines back to me that I had said at the end of my monologues that were like the punctuating lines, and I'd come off stage and they'd be repeating them back to me. And that's just in a theater setting, that's just like, yeah. Cause I mean, these are my fellow actors, and I've just yelled something right before I went off stage and the word cuckold was very much used in the play as a description.
Oh, you had to like, oh yeah, you're telling me about that.
Cuckold, cuckold, cuckold. And I'd come off of stage and I would, there would be one or two people sometimes that would, do that back to me as I came off stage back into the green room or the cast room area, backstage area. And they'd be repeating it back or just mouthing it back to me. And that, those are the times that I knew I hit it.
Yeah.
Cause they had heard it and that specific night or performance or whatever, I had hit just the right tone saying it, just the right cadence saying it, that they were like delighting in it at having heard it. And that's awesome, because that's part of the reciprocal thing you get in theater when you have that, is they recognize when you've nailed the spot. Just a quick side note, there was a lady that would there was a lady in the cast that was supposed to be in imitating my character at one point or another,
uh-huh.
talking about what my character was saying,
mm-hmm.
and the first couple of nights, all through rehearsal, the first couple of nights, she was just doing it in her voice, imitating mm-hmm. the, you know, saying, oh yeah, he's saying what's in the box, and literally it's a what's in the box scenario, but you know, she was just saying it in her own voice.
Yeah.
But then she started doing it in like a super deep voice, an imitation of my voice, super
because
deep angry voice.
Caught it, you know.
Well, no, she just decided just to throw it out one night, just to do it,
nice.
Just to try it. It just was her own personal inspiration
yeah.
to do this deeper version of my voice in or deep version of her voice to imitate my voice.
Yeah.
Imitating my character, and the first time I heard it, I about fell down laughing. And when she came backstage, I said, that thing you did with that line, she goes, yeah. I said, do it every time, do it bigger. I love it. It's so great, because it was just she was trying to make fun of that character, and that character needed to be made fun of because he was a blowhard. He was a total ass.
Okay.
So for her making fun of the character was great for the whole point of the story.
Yeah.
But I just loved that she was trying to do that deep voice to make fun of me. That was so wonderful.
That's
and every
fantastic.
Time she would come off stage from doing it, and I would see her, I would repeat that line at her and try to give her ideas of exactly how I said it to make it even better, but still just repeating the line to her, because I thought it was such an ingenious moment that she did that.
That's fantastic.
It was so great.
That's great.
So great. That's how the theater world works. Anyway.
So real quick, what was the before we move on to my next point here? What was the play? It was Shakespeare?
Yeah,
wasn't it
was Merry Wives of Windsor.
Merry Wives of Windsor.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
I'll have to check that one out. I haven't seen it. I wanted to see you.
Hey, things happen.
Able to make it.
Schedule happens.
Yeah.
You've had a couple of live shows recently that I haven't been able to make. Just schedules happen.
Hey. Yeah,
but
that's how life
so
works, man. But that's okay.
When you were at the show, how is the show and your time at the show connected to the celebrity deaths?
Well, okay. So
where,
I opened the show.
That's where you're going with the story.
Yeah, that's where I went with it. I opened the show.
Yeah.
With the song "Good Times Roll" by the Cars.
Oh, Rick. Okay.
Yeah, and that was in honor of Rick Ocasek from the Cars, who just recently passed away. He was 75.
Wow, was he still on TV?
He was.
Isn't he the guy that was on Law and Order or something?
He was.
Maybe he wasn't. I don't know.
No, he looks a lot like that guy on Law and Order.
He looks like the guy, but he's not
the
guy.
He looks a lot like him, but he's not Rick Ocasek. Yeah, that's not Rick Ocasek. He looks a lot like Rick Ocasek.
Okay.
I know you're talking about.
Okay.
No, he was not on Law and Order, but he did do a couple of things. He actually did some comedy stuff with Stephen Colbert during the Colbert Report,
okay,
as well. So that's kind of cool. But he was actually very much a hero of Colbert when he showed up to New York and started doing his thing. So it was kind of cool. But no, Rick was, and I didn't know this. He was like 35 when the Cars broke, when they got big. In the mid-70s,
so basically what you're saying is there's still time.
Oh, there's still time.
There's still time.
There's still time.
We can still make it big.
That's one thing I found out, complete side note. Monster Magnet, the band Monster Magnet from like the mid-90s.
I remember them.
Dude.
Space Lord. I love that song.
That guy was 40 when that song broke.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Again, there's still time.
Yeah, Space Lord and the Power Trip album, dude. He was 40 years old.
What I keep telling myself is every time I think about whether I'll ever make it big in any kind of show business, in acting, in music. Yes, I do have moderate music skills.
Yeah.
Anytime I think about the possibility of making it big anywhere in that, I remind myself of one person, Alan Rickman. He was in his 40s before he hit it big.
Same with Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, Sam Jackson.
He was in his 40s too.
Was older too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's still a possibility. I still could hit it big.
Totally.
They're looking for a short, fat guy with a beard. Hell, if they want to do the George R.R. Martin life story, I'm doing it, dude.
Dude, that'd be great.
I could do it.
That would be great.
Rick Ocasek, that's his last name. I can never say his last name. It's one of those that I see the letters and it jumbles in my brain.
And I grew up on the Cars, so it was like in honor of that guy. That was cool.
I can say my wife was disheartened to hear that, because she was a big fan of the Cars.
Yeah. So we have him. Eddie Money was another one that passed.
Yeah, another 80s icon.
Yeah, he was 70. And he had esophageal cancer, actually found it. He was a big smoker.
That's one of those that one of those cancers that they usually find late.
Yeah.
And it's usually very fatal, and it's,
yep.
I can say that I personally had my life touched by that cancer. Somebody,
oh, wow.
Somebody that I know or knew very well, that it was an integral part of mine and more specifically my wife's life and her entire family's life.
Oh, wow.
Passed away from that.
Wow.
And so it is not a thing to be taken lightly. If you have one of the things that actually does also help cause it, not just smoking, mm-hmm. but acid reflux. If you have bad acid reflux, it eats away at the lining of your esophagus, mm-hmm. and the eating away at it and its attempt to rebuild is when you have the more chance of getting cancerous cells.
So if you have like continual heartburn and stuff like
go
that,
see a doctor,
checked out.
Get your scope done. Have them put the scope down your throat to check to see how bad your situation is. And if they give you medication for it, take your damn medication and try to limit your spicy foods and your foods that aggravate your acid reflux. Because literally, sure. it's one of those things that can be a silent killer of people. It's not good. Again, somebody else I know within that same family has already been tested and has shown precancerous cells, which means that the damage has been done to the esophagus.
Whoa.
And it's been trying to, you know, regrow. It hasn't turned cancerous yet, but it's basically, if they kept having all the acid reflux and all the different issues they were dealing with that, it could eventually turn into a cancerous thing. They Dang. Need to be monitored on a regular basis. This specific person gets the endoscope yearly just to make sure that there's no changes in their in their esophagus stuff.
That's keeping an eye on it, though.
It's keeping an eye on it. It's making sure it's okay, but it's not a joke, people. It's something that is a big deal. And I'm saying so much about it because the person that the family lost to it was a very important person.
Man.
Very important person.
That's insane. That's pretty crazy. We have one more musician death. They tend to happen in threes. A lot of these celebrity deaths tend to happen in threes.
Well, at least we see them as happening in threes.
Yeah,
it's kind of a mental thing. I don't know that it technically really does happen that way, but we
tend to see it that way.
Society media, we like to group them in threes. So,
the next one was big to me, huge to me. The guy's name is Daniel Johnston.
Okay, and I'm gonna give you an admission.
Yeah.
Until you said something to, you know, you posted something about it, and I believe you made a comment, one of our listeners,
mm-hmm.
And relative of mine,
yeah.
one of our listeners had commented about it, and you commented something about this gentleman and his influences and the
yeah.
things that he influenced. I can admit, I don't think I've ever heard of this guy.
Okay, so this guy was, his name is Daniel Johnston, he was 58 years old.
Yeah.
He had a series of different mental illnesses, but he was known as a very prolific singer-songwriter, and he was incredibly respected by a lot of very accomplished music acts.
My understanding was he was inspiration for a lot of the acts in the grunge movement, from what you were saying.
Yes, and some people outside of that. He was an influence for Tom Waits, but a lot of grunge acts. Pearl Jam cites him. I think they've even covered his work. Kurt Cobain specifically cited him.
Of his would I know?
What of Daniel Johnston's works?
Yeah.
If you were to have heard the act, I'm going to have to look that one up.
Okay.
I don't have that one on. I don't have that on file. But I'll double check that. If there's anybody who is interested in this guy, look up the documentary. It's called "The Devil and Daniel Johnston."
Okay, now this I've heard of. I've heard
okay.
of this documentary.
This documentary? Okay, so basically Daniel Johnston was born in Sacramento.
Oh, so he's local.
He's a local boy.
Okay.
He was a local boy. And he actually had, like I said, he lived with his parents for a while. He had a slew of different mental illnesses. But one of the things that he was known for more than anything was he would create and produce his own albums.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
From home.
Okay.
It was just him and a little drum machine, acoustic guitar, four-track tape.
Wow.
Here's the thing about this, though, the way he would do this. His four-track tape recordings were not four-track tape recorded and then put out. He actually would self-produce every single one of the copies of his albums that came out, these little tape cassette albums. It had hand-drawn artwork on it. It had lyrics in it. It had song track listings. It had the whole thing. He actually was incapable of doing mass production of his tapes. So he, and I swear to you, this is absolutely 100% true, performed every single copy of these tapes. Every one of them is a one-of-a-kind performance of these recordings. He would play the songs on every cassette copy. He would hand-draw the artwork on every cassette copy, and he released a few different albums.
Okay.
But they were self-produced and self-performed every single copy.
I just want to make the comment, this is definitely one of these times that I wish that we were doing the filming versions of our podcasts.
Yeah.
We had the film set up because I think the look of shock on my face.
Yeah.
Just the simple fact of every single tape.
Yes. This is one of the things that tends to, like, this is that fine line between genius and mental illness.
No, this, I mean,
that is walked by some.
I can understand the mythology that would be created around this guy.
Yeah. But it was, the thing is what I'm telling you is 100% true.
Wow.
And you should see this documentary because you end up falling in love with this person and who he was and what he was capable of and how committed he was to what was going on. He did have a lot of insecurities, especially social ones, but he still would go out and he would perform. He became huge in Seattle. He actually lived in Texas. He was found he did have some kidney issues, and he was found dead of a heart attack. He was not a small guy. He was a very overweight guy. He wasn't necessarily completely healthy diet-wise or physically. But his big thing was he was able to become a functioning, contributing member of the music community that was essentially, because of his work ethic, completely untouched. And he is somebody that is – you mentioned Daniel Johnston – to any working musician, and the mass appeal of this guy was just nothing but the fascination of his fan base due to the dedication to his work.
Yeah, it's like music was everything for him. Anybody else that tries to claim music is everything is not.
No, music was everything to this guy.
In the caliber
of this guy. Wow. And he had a lot that he dealt with, and he documented a lot of it. And when you listen to the music itself, it's simple. It's straight ahead. And even though it may not be particularly as catchy as many of these other artists,
it doesn't matter.
It's pure. It's music in its purest form.
Yeah, it's not something that's doctored. It's not something that's built to try to sell things. It's literally an expression of his own feelings and thoughts, and this is his music that's an expression of him. This probably more him than anything else most people put out.
Yeah.
So that's,
and so this guy is worth looking up. Take a look at his material. Like, you may notice it. To anybody who's listening, you may notice it to be very, very simple and simplistic. Let that go by the wayside. Try to find lyrics. Try to find the words that this guy is saying, because it is a documentation of it's this guy's soul performed over and over and over. And that dedication was something that transferred extremely well to the grunge artists of the 90s specifically.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that were independent music artists that had nothing but themselves, their music, and their charisma to go by.
This is a person purely pouring out their soul, and that's kind of what grunge was trying to do, was add a level of purity to things in a time where everything was overproduced and overdone, overblown.
Yes, absolutely.
In fact, if you would have sat down with any of the grunge artists during that time frame, that's pretty much what they would have told you, is that they were trying to find the purity in music again. They were trying to get away from the corporate music landscape.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do we have any more celebrity deaths that we need to discuss at this point?
Just one that I would mention. Anybody, I guess it's kind of sort of tied to music because it is somewhat tied to Rob Zombie.
Well, I wouldn't call that tied to music. This guy wasn't necessarily a musician.
No, he was a.
And this is fresh one,
very
by
much
the way.
This happened this morning. The headlines came out on this guy this morning. We're recording this on Monday, by the way. Obviously, normally these guys come out on Thursdays.
The new
episodes come out on Thursdays. We record them on Mondays. Sid Haig, a very
well-known
relatively,
B actor.
Yeah, he was a B movie. He was a cult character actor.
Yes.
He was a specific type of character in every one of his movies.
Guy.
Yeah. Had charisma for days, especially in the B movie market, but he was most well known for the character of Captain Spaulding in the Rob Zombie films, starting with House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah.
Was first, and the second one was The Devil's Rejects.
Yes.
And the most recent one, which I think it may have just come out, if it's not going to come out extremely soon. Three from Hell is the third in the movie series. I didn't think he was in it. He is.
He is in it. Okay.
Yes, he is in it. He was able to film and do his stuff beforehand. Unfortunately, he, I believe last week I saw. Huh?
Did you say his name?
Sid Haig?
Yeah, I didn't know if you said his name.
Yeah, Sid Haig. He was unfortunately hospitalized for a fall. And from the details that I found, he was 80.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was hospitalized for a fall. He was quite a bit older.
It's not a good thing.
Yeah, no, no, no. He was hospitalized for a fall. He unfortunately, while he was in recovery, he threw up in his sleep.
Aspirated.
No,
he did not.
No. But what happened was while he was in recovery, he threw up from his sleep and it caused a lung infection. And he died from the lung infection. I believe it may have been like last night or this morning, but all the headlines have come out. So, mad respect to Sid Haig. Rest in peace. All of you guys, Daniel Johnston, Andy Money, Rick Ocasek, a lot of big stars that kind of went this last week.
Especially with a couple of them being the 80s music icons, Eddie Money and Rick Ocasek were really big icons in the 80s for music.
Yeah.
And that's
for sure.
You know, One of those things that we kind of start having to get used to is many of the people that kind of dominated our childhood as far as actors, actresses, musicians, we will start seeing those people kind of go by the wayside.
Yeah.
Because just the result of aging, the result of getting older.
Yeah.
Getting into that time frame. From a somber note to maybe a little more upbeat note. Let me go upbeat real quick.
And then we'll go back to
before
the slightly crazier stuff that's going down.
Yeah.
Well, no disrespect, by the way, which is some stuff that I just recently found out. So that may not have been a proper choice of words.
Okay. Let's get to something that's a little upbeat right now before our break. In fact, we'll deal with the Carter family situation after the break.
Okay.
And then the Antonio Brown stuff after the break. So we'll make the break about things that are a little bit more
wild.
Give
it a two split subject deal.
One of the other pieces of news, I'm a big fan of the CW Network's DC interconnected universe. They call it the Arrowverse because Arrow was the first show that was done. And we've talked a little bit about it on the podcast here before. But they are announcing that this year they're going to do a Crisis on Infinite Worlds storyline.
That's
now,
fantastic.
Obviously, they can only do so much, but they do have some of the most important players. They do have a Superman. They have a Supergirl. They have a Flash. These are some of the most important players. In fact, one of the biggest covers, if I remember correctly, from that is Superman holding Supergirl's dying body.
Oh.
I don't know if you remember that from the Crisis on the Infinite Worlds.
It came out when I was a kid, and I liked comic books, but I wasn't able to fervently follow them. Yeah.
That's one of the only things I really remember, and I think Flash – I think one of the other things is Flash sacrifices himself to make everything go right.
You're talking the Crisis. Wasn't that in the 80s or 90s?
The Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Yeah.
It was in the 80s or 90s. I don't remember exactly when it happened.
Yeah. That's right, because that's when they like started rebooting the storyline. That was one of the first reboots they
rebooted. And again, I don't know all the details, but I remember specifically the cover with Superman holding Supergirl's body, or a Superman holding a Supergirl's body.
Interesting.
Because again, we're dealing with multiple Earths.
Right.
So within that, in the CW's version, they're going to have multiple of certain superheroes. They've already introduced multiple Flashes from different worlds.
Cool.
Because Flash has been to different worlds within his timeline. Mm-hmm. They have introduced one Superman who's in the Supergirl TV series. Tyler Hoechlin plays the Superman in that series. And he's a decent Superman, but he only shows up as like a supporting character because Supergirl's the story here. And in this specific one, I don't know how true it is depending on which comics you look at, but in this specific series, the Supergirl is stronger than Superman.
Whoa.
Yeah, Supergirl is stronger.
Okay.
There's been some rumors about some interesting casting happening. Now, they recently added a Batwoman TV show with Ruby Rose as Batwoman.
Yes.
And there's been interesting casting being talked about added in for this Crisis storyline. I had revealed to you a couple of weeks ago that Kevin Conroy, the voice of the animated Batman, probably the best Batman voice ever, is actually going to be playing an older version of Bruce Wayne in the Batwoman series.
Ah, that's so fantastic.
Which is awesome. I don't know how much time he's going to have, but that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
word has got out recently of a few more things happening. For the Supermans, Brandon Routh, who was Superman in the one, what was it, Superman, I forget the name of the movie that he was the Superman
Superman
in.
Returns.
Returns, thank you.
That's a terrible film. Well, only if you haven't seen the Donner Cut.
No, even if you have, even if you have seen that, it's still a terrible.
The Donner
film.
Cut of the second one, because it's based on Donner.
I know. It's based on Donner's thing. It forgets 3 and 4, which is good, because 3 and 4 are awful. Mm-hmm. But it's still Brandon Routh. Just I don't think he had what he needed to play. I mean, he was not Christopher Reeve. He tried, but he's not Christopher Reeve.
Nah.
And I did not like who they had as Lois Lane. I can't even remember who the actress is. I think she's the girl from Blue Crush. Kate Bosworth, that's who it was.
Oh, Lois Lane. Okay.
Awful. Uh-huh. And then Kevin Spacey, back when he was still a name that could be spoken without it being a derogatory term.
You know what I saw when I saw Kevin Spacey in that, though?
You saw Austin Powers.
I saw him playing Dr. Evil because he looked exactly the
same. Well, he did it before. He did Dr. Evil before that.
Yeah.
The fake Dr. Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Or the cinematic Dr. Evil. You watch Austin Powers 3 and you'll understand.
The APCU.
But I never liked the film. Anyway, Brandon Routh, who's been in the Arrowverse stuff, he's played a character in that. He's the Atom.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of his name off the top of my head, his normal name off the top of my head at this moment, but he's been in the series.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to come back and play a version of Superman.
That's cool.
Which is nice. I mean, you get an old Superman actor. I know they've in Supergirl, the TV series, they've had Dean Cain, who played Superman before.
Sick.
They had Terry Hatcher. They had Helen Slater, who was Supergirl in the original Supergirl movie.
Mm-hmm.
So they've brought in various actors from these things before to try to – they're trying to add to the fun of the Arrowverse by bringing in former DC stars that have played these various characters.
Yeah.
Well, two new names have recently been reported.
Yes.
The first one, in an undisclosed role as of yet, Burt Ward.
That's fantastic.
For those of you who don't know, first of all, shame on you.
Right?
Shame on you. No, dishonor. Sorry. Dishonor on you. Dishonor on your cow.
Dishonor on your cow. Okay.
Movie reference. Anyway, Burt Ward is the Robin from the original Batman series in the 60s.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The Adam West Batman series.
Did you ever catch, completely side note here, did you ever catch the Batman 66 films, the animated movies that came out?
No. Oh, yeah. Yes, I've seen them. I have seen them.
You have?
I own them.
I still haven't seen Batman versus Two-Face.
I want to
see that one just to hear Shatner as Two-Face. Still haven't seen it yet.
Now, that one I may not have seen.
Okay, so there was
Shatner as Two-Face. That would be fun.
Oh, you're not talking the animated ones. Have you seen the animated ones?
Yeah, I've seen some of the animated ones. Maybe not all the way through, but I've seen pieces of them.
Okay, check this out. Batman 66 was a comic book series that was continued after the...
Oh, okay, this is a newer thing.
This is
thing.
An anime... Yeah, these oh, are no, two I have not seen animated
these
films.
I have not seen these.
This is just before Adam West passed. They did an Adam West Batman with Burt Ward's voice as Robin.
Nice.
So it was Adam West and Burt Ward. Julie Newmar played Catwoman.
Nice.
And they had a slew of other voice actors play the other characters, obviously for the sake of age, and some of the characters they didn't have, so you couldn't have gotten, like, they didn't have Burgess Meredith as the Penguin.
Dead.
Yeah,
I think he's already gone. Romero's been dead for a long time.
Yeah, but they got extremely accurate voice actors for these. It is 66. Dude, you've got to see this thing.
I'm going to have to. And then the second
one, they did a sequel to it because the first one was so damn popular. They had William Shatner play Two-Face.
That's amazing.
I know.
I'm going to have to see
that. And it's the last voice acting role that Adam West had before he died.
Wow.
Was flipping Batman.
Well, that's appropriate.
Oh, yeah. But the story plot twist that they put in the first one is worth watching the whole thing for. It's wonderful.
I'm going to have to see it then.
Yeah.
Is this another one I can steal from you?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Fantastic.
I'm pretty sure I got a DVD backup copy that I can give you.
But anyway, Burt Ward, yes, was the original Robin.
And he's cast now?
He is in an undisclosed role in the Batwoman series.
Fantastic.
But for the Crisis specifically, they have brought in one more actor.
Who's that?
This is a dream for many people. This is the fulfillment of things. What would be...
Who's... Okay.
I mean, what would be the one thing that DC fans would want to see again?
Okay.
Of all things
they
would want to see
again. Let me think about this for a second,
because
we had... Okay, so we've already got Dean Cain, yes. Right? You're obviously not going to have Christopher Reeve.
You're on the right track. So, yeah, keep going.
Because I'm thinking other guys played Superman and or other guys that other guys that have essentially played Superman.
We already know who's going to be Batman,
right? So. You got Kevin,
yeah. Which finally he gets to do it in live action. So amazing!
I know, right?
But who else would be amazing to see? Back
honestly,
as a
like just because he looked the part so well, and you didn't get to fully see him. Really, I mean, you saw him for like a shot, right? Like a single shot.
You're there,
Tom Welling.
Yep, Tom Welling
Shut
is
up.
In.
Tom Welling is going.
Tom Welling is
he playing a Superman?
He's playing Superman.
Oh my God! Okay,
he's playing a version of Superman, one of the Earth Supermen.
I saw this rumor. People are just like, "Hey, photoshopping Tom Welling on a Superman costume."
Not rumor confirmed. He will be returning.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's for anybody that was a Smallville fan. I know you have a friend that was a huge Smallville fan.
Yeah, saw the entire series.
You saw it, or the friend did?
No, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about same person, hopefully.
I believe so.
Yeah. Huge, huge Smallville fan. If he's listening to this, guess what, buddy? You're going to get your chance to see him as legit Superman. And hopefully, the biggest thing is it's not going to mean a damn thing unless you really get to see him in the costume. Because you're right. You only get one partial shot.
Yeah.
And you get more.
It's like in the final episode, there's a like last shot.
Yeah. You get way more of Batman at the end of Gotham than you get of Superman as Superman at the end of Smallville.
Yeah, totally.
So the only way this sells right, the only way this works perfect mm-hmm. is if you literally get to see him in the full garb. He's in the costume. That's the only way it works.
Yeah.
And then it works.
Oh,
it very much works.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, that's kind of my
dude, I'm excited.
Entertainment-y news.
I'm ready.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back, and we have to talk about something interesting with the Carter family, and I'm not talking about Jay-Z. We're talking about some other Carters. And, of course, the saga of Antonio Brown. We'll be back in a minute.
The saga.
Hey, everyone. This is James from the Zenio Chronicles. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button at the bottom of this video. And be sure to click on the bell icon so you can be notified when we release new videos. And if you aren't watching on YouTube, please go to our page and do all that stuff anyway. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show. And we're back. So, said before the break that we were going to be talking about the Carter family.
Yeah, I think we want to open with this one because I kind of want to hear more about the Antonio Brown thing, and I want to be able to react to it a little bit more.
Okay, so what's going on? This is Nick and Aaron Carter, right?
There's more than just Nick.
Nick is of Backstreet Boys fame.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Carter was his little brother that tried to have a music career as well.
Yeah, essentially. That's pretty much the main backing storylines, basically the blonde ones. Yeah, they were the ones that pretty much. I mean, Aaron Carter was kind of getting his start on like Disney. He was kind of like one of those Disney kid artists, hired after the Backstreet Boys got big.
Yeah.
But basically, long story short, there has been a bit of a issue, between Nick and Aaron Carter. Now that just to give a little backstory. Aaron Carter has been in the news and has been shown to have a bit of a he's got a bit of an unstable side. Yeah, he's got a substance issue.
He's had issues with different substances before. He's had some legal troubles before.
Yeah, he's had legal problems, that kind of stuff. He was, and I don't necessarily mean this as an insult to Aaron Carter, but he was kind of holding the Justin Bieber reputation before Justin Bieber was a thing.
I get what you're saying. Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like he was a little bit, bad boy, unstable, that kind of a thing. So that's kind of what has been going on with this. Now, unfortunately, though, in more recent news, Nick Carter has actually filed a restraining order against Aaron Carter,
against his brother,
And I just found out recently that also their sister, Angel Carter, also has filed for a restraining order. So something's happening with Aaron, which is a little strange. There was a statement by Nick Carter, and I'll read it and I'll quote it. This is kind of big. This is a The quote is from apparently from Nick Carter, which I don't know what they're called. I'm reading this off Yahoo News. This is obtained by, I guess, a news website called The Blast.
Okay.
But basically, Nick says this: "My brother Aaron Carter has exhibited increasingly unstable behaviors and recently admitted to having schizophrenia with multiple other mental disorders. Most recently, Aaron informed my sister Angel that," and this is pretty, this is a little morbid here.
I just saw this going.
"He thinks about killing babies and has thought about killing my wife, Lauren. Lauren is now pregnant, and I fear for our unborn child. Aaron is known to keep firearms ready available. I need an injunction because I fear for my safety, the safety of my wife and children, and the safety of my wife's parents. I'm afraid he will listen to the voices in his head and cause harm to my family." Which, I mean, that I didn't – I just read that quote for the first time, and I'm reacting to it probably as much as you are.
He was kind of calling for a couple of things
where he was tweeting with hashtags about, you know, mental health and gun control and that kind of thing, which I would understand his stance on that just out of the reaction of what's going on. But now I know that he's had a history of substance abuse, and
can I get a little psychological on you here?
Sure.
Because I do have a little bit of a bent towards getting psychological about certain things.
Okay.
A lot of times people that are involved in substance abuse and substance usage are doing so in a way of self-medicating themselves.
Yes.
When it comes to a lot of mental disorders that many people are either too afraid because of social stigma to seek out appropriate help for, or even just to talk to because of the social stigma evolving around it. Especially, actually, this is one of those things that it affects men and women equally in our society. It's one of those few things where we are affected equally, but in a different way. And men to admit to these to some of these mental issues is a sign of weakness, is a sign that we're, you know, we're incomplete in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
For women to admit to these things, it's actually more of a conforming to the idea that women are just crazy, which is a funny little way that, again, a male-driven society uses to devalue a woman's opinion is just to try to paint them as being mentally unstable.
Yeah.
And so if they have any of these true mental health conditions that are legitimate health problems, legitimate health issues, that are really no different than somebody having diabetes or somebody having high blood pressure. These are things that are your body not working the way that everybody's body does or the majority of people's body does. These are chemicals that are different in your body. Again, just like having any of these other things that we can take a medication for and are acceptable health ailments, things that are societally okay. You know, this person has diabetes, whatever. We make sure there's sugar-free things for this person. We make sure, you know, people with any kind of a mental illness, it's the same type of thing. It is a chemical imbalance within your body, yet there's still such a stigma about it. And again, for women to admit to a mental illness, oh, they're just crazy like other women and we can devalue their opinion even more. For men to have it, oh, you're weak. Oh, you're not strong enough to deal with it yourself.
Right.
For men to try to have these things and discuss these things. And luckily, this is part of some of the shift that we're seeing in society where we can talk about these things more openly, where women can get help for their mental illnesses without it being stigmatized, where men can get help without it being stigmatized.
Right.
We're seeing so much more of a trend of this, but there are still so many people that buy into this idea, and it is part of the reason why we have kind of the mental health crisis we have, because we don't sit and talk about it appropriately. We don't have realistic conversations about it. And frank, open conversations without attacking people and making people feel like they're less than. Because you're not. Just in case anybody listening does have any identified or even not identified mental illness, situation, however, whatever words you want to use to describe it and that feels safe for you to use to describe it, you are not less than anybody else.
Yeah.
You're just different. And each one of us is different. I'm as different as you're different.
Yep.
We're all people. Take from one of my favorite movies. It's one of my feel-good movies. My Big Fat Greek Wedding. I love that movie.
Yeah.
It makes me feel good to watch it. It's a silly movie, but it makes me feel good to watch it. It puts a smile on my face.
I always look at Windex a different way now.
Well, just at the end, the father of the bride is giving his speech about the families, and he's like, you know, our family is Portocallis, that comes from Orange. Your family is Miller, and he tries to find the root word of Greek for it. It's a thing in the movie. It's funny. Watch it. But he roots it back to the word for apple. And he says, you know, so we have apples and we have oranges. We're both different, but we're both fruit in comparison to the families. So the fact the families are different, but they're the same. They're the same thing. They're all fruits.
Yeah.
But they're different types of fruit. And that's what people are. We're all people, but each one of us is our own different type of people. Then we may share similarities with others. But when it comes to those things, just again, the fact that we can have the discussion now and – yeah, it sounds like Aaron's, I mean, just from not knowing him and just seeing what we can see in the media,
yeah.
Maybe his substance abuse had to do with the fact that he had these issues mentally, these chemical imbalance issues that he wasn't getting treated in appropriate fashion, that he wasn't getting looked at by his own inability to articulate, maybe by his own inability to find the things that he needs to, or just by society's inability to have those things available as they need to properly.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. You're hitting the nail on the head here. Actually, funny enough, he did get to come out with a statement,
and like, his statement was,
well, here, let me read it for you.
Please do.
I've got it dialed up here. Basically, last night he actually put out a tweet. Big old please read kind of a thing. And basically, it says this. I'm well aware many of you have shown concern for me over the past few weeks. Having people who genuinely care for you is something that should never be taken for granted. As long as I can remember, I've chased unconditional love and hope for true stability in my family. I've spent most of my adult life seeking validation from these same people. I started to get a chip on my shoulder when I kept coming up short on something that doesn't cost a thing. Love. All I want is love. What has transpired recently does not represent my true wants or needs. I've been fighting fire with fire, something I still need to work on. Some have pointed and laughed, but many, many more have shown genuine support for what I've been vulnerable enough to share. For the record, I'm okay. So, essentially, what he is stating is...
There's so much to unpack from that.
Yeah.
I give him
props for trying to be open about what's going down.
Well, I do, but at the same time, there are some things in there. There are some warning things in there that he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of trying to seek that validation of love from people in that way,
mm-hmm.
that's something that he really needs to be talking to a mental health expert on, because that's – and the words unconditional love are very difficult, because what it comes down to is even if you – I'm speaking as a parent that I have three kids that I absolutely love and a wife that I am completely devoted to.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as unconditional love. As much as you want there to be, all of those things have some form of condition. And if you have unconditional love, I don't really think that that's necessarily healthy. There still needs to be some kind of expectation of appropriate behavior, some kind of expectation of things to happen in certain ways. Mm-hmm. There needs to be understanding. There needs to be leniency. There needs to be the ability to discuss and work through issues and problems.
Yeah.
But the fact that that everything is unconditional no matter what, I mean, I can say this, man. You're a good friend of mine, and I love you dearly. But if, like, you killed somebody that did not deserve to be killed, that wasn't a good reason to be killed, if you just straight up killed somebody, my love does not extend that far. I'm turning your ass in.
No, I
you're
get
gonna
it.
See,
well,
you're
going
to see the authority in this.
I don't think that's necessarily tied to love specifically as much
some,
as it's just concern
but
for safety
some people,
for you and other people.
But okay, let's dial down the – I went to the extreme example. Let's dial it down a little bit. If you were – if with our professional relationship here, working on this, and our professional relationship is just a small fraction of our personal relationship as friends.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were getting heavy into drugs and stuff, and I was trying to get you the help to try to stop it, because I wouldn't. I'm the type of guy that I wouldn't hesitate. I wouldn't keep my mouth shut if I saw you getting into that stuff.
Yeah,
I'm going to tell you you're messing up.
Yeah,
you're having problems.
Yeah,
you need to work on this. If you weren't going to be working on this and trying to get out of those things that can bring your life down,
mm-hmm.
I would be backing away from our relationship and our friendship.
Totally.
Because
I would understand that.
You can't have that necessarily
in there. If I was in the level of stability that Aaron unfortunately is in, yeah. obviously, I wouldn't be able to recognize those things. I wouldn't be able to credit myself with recognizing those things. Actually, I doubt that I would be
able
to.
Well, you might be. Let me give you some information. I had a conversation recently with somebody dealing with addiction, specifically alcohol addiction, mm-hmm. and how I identify somebody as an alcoholic. And this is kind of the way that I do it. It isn't about drinking all the time, because that's not what shows you're an alcoholic. It's about what you do when you're drinking. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you're at a party with your buddy, okay? You're at a party with your buddy.
Okay.
Your buddy's getting smashed. Your buddy's getting hammered. He's drinking.
Yeah.
You are his buddy. You're like, you guys are close. On a regular basis, yeah. you guys are close.
Yeah.
If you can go up to your buddy and say, dude, I think you need to dial it back. I think you've had too much. Now, I'm talking on a normal night, not on a night where he's drinking because there's exceptions happening. He's just got broke up with or something big's happened. His mom's died.
Yeah, you're
died,
not talking like
that kind of thing.
Large situations.
I'm talking about like a normal night of going out and drinking at a bar or drinking at a party or something like this.
Okay.
This isn't he's drinking away sorrow. He's drinking away something.
He's just drinking a lot.
It's just this night he is overindulging it. If you can go up to your buddy and say, hey, man, I think you need to dial it back. You've had too much. And he's able to listen to you.
Yeah.
He's able to rationally listen to you like he would normally listen to you in any normal situation.
Yeah.
That guy may not be an alcoholic. May not be. He might still be.
Right.
But he may not be. The true right. sign of somebody that is when they refuse to listen to anybody mm-hmm. on a normal basis, and they have no ability to stop themselves right. on a normal basis from consuming.
I can agree with that.
I mean, you and I know a guy that I would say was at one point. It's a guy that you and I both know.
Yeah,
that was at one point either alcoholic or borderline alcoholic. Because when he'd get the drink in him, you could not tell him to stop.
Yeah,
he would get belligerent. He would get angry mm-hmm. at that point. Normally not a belligerent or angry guy. Normally one of the nicest guys around.
Yeah,
sweet nice guy. Love him to death. But when he got to that point. And I'm sure if we were to talk to him about it, he would probably agree that when it came time at certain times with that, he didn't necessarily have control. Now, there are a lot of reasons that he would have been that way. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of things that could be considered baggage for it. But at the same time, I think he's even recognized some of that in himself and has changed some things in his life as a result.
Yes, very much so. And I'm actually very proud of the guy.
I can say from the times that I've been with you and been out drinking with you, mm-hmm. if somebody tells you to stop drinking, you do.
Yeah.
The other problem is if somebody tells you to keep drinking, you do, or at least you did. you have a buffer for that now in your wife.
Yes.
But it used to be you didn't have that buffer, and so you were easily susceptible to keep drinking. But if it was our announcer buddy Scott were just hanging out, just the three of us,
yeah.
and you got a little bit too much, Scott and I definitely aren't the type to keep you going.
Yeah.
So if we said, hey, man, we think you're done. Let's have some water. Let's have something to eat. You wouldn't be
totally
belligerent.
Like, okay.
Yeah, you wouldn't be belligerent. You wouldn't be stopping it. You wouldn't be like, no, you don't know what I'm talking about. I can control myself. To me, that's the sign of somebody that's addicted. Totally. To something is when they can't listen to somebody else's voice, when they can't and they can't acknowledge that they may be in and over their head with something.
Yeah.
And that's not just alcohol. That can be an addiction to anything. And those are the type of people, for instance, I don't like drinking around me mm-hmm. because those are the type of people that you don't know what they're going to do when they're drinking. I knew what you were going to do when you drank, and I didn't ever worry about it. And I knew that if you needed to be cut off because you had too much and you needed to mm-hmm. to take it easy, you wouldn't be belligerent. You wouldn't cause a problem. You'd just be like, all right, okay.
Yeah.
And it would be good to go.
That's chill.
Because then that's the person that at least can have some control over it. Now, I'm not saying that person is not an alcoholic.
Right.
But I'm saying that they have less likelihood to be one than a person that is just belligerent about it.
Well, there's a lot of, there's definitely a lot of stigma around that too.
And
when it comes down
But one of the other things that I found is these people that are in this level of alcoholism, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm running you over again.
You're good.
These people that are in this level of, just addiction, not just alcoholism, but they're in this level of addiction. When they say something like the unconditional love, they want to still be able to have that level of addiction and what happens to them under that addiction. Mm-hmm. And not have to face the consequences of how those actions hurt the people around them.
Okay, now I see your point here.
This happens. This is what happens: is you still need to accept me. And those to me personally, they may not be that way to anybody else. Those to me are some trigger words mm-hmm. that make me think this is a person that wants to be able to do whatever they want and not have to face the ramifications of it.
Okay,
and
so still this
want
guy
the people loving and accepting on me.
This sounds that'd okay.
Be my
now
interpretation.
I get your point. Now I get your point. Yes. Okay. I understand that. That's okay. So I was misinterpreting what he was saying, I believe.
I probably would. This is why I gave the explanation to further it, because I hear this. I have dealt with people like this that they want to be able to do all of these things that are, in many ways, these are self-destructive and toxic behaviors. Mm-hmm. And then when they get called on it and they get people that are trying to tell them, no, we can't have that in our life, you being toxic like this. It's, oh, so your love doesn't extend to that. You're putting rules on your love. That's their defense that they use. And that unconditional love, I typically only hear that phrase being used personally.
Does he say unconditional love?
That's what you read, was unconditional love. Something about searching for unconditional love. That phrase keyed in my brain, and find out if I'm wrong. But
he does say, "Let the legal system do their thing."
Yes,
as well.
He does say that. But when I hear that phrase or see that phrase, unconditional love, that makes me think of the people that I have seen and dealt with that have these addiction problems, these things that poison their lives, and they become a poison to the people around them. It's there.
It does not say unconditional love.
What does he say?
He does say what he wants or what he kept. So it says, I started to get a chip on my shoulder when I kept coming up short on something that doesn't cost a thing, love. So what this is...
So keep reading.
Reading. All I want is love. What has transpired recently does not represent my true wants or needs. I've been fighting fire with fire, something I still need to work on. Some have pointed and laughed, but many more have shown genuine support for what I've been vulnerable enough to share. So that phrase, now that you read that, it doesn't say unconditional. However, I think you're on a point here, because looking at the phrase, that looks like placing blame disguised as opening up. That looks like something different.
Earlier in this thing, mm-hmm. For as long as I can remember, I've chased unconditional love and hoped for true stability in my family. I spent most of my adult life seeking validation from these same people.
Ah, okay.
Right there.
Okay.
And that's where I heard the unconditional love. I heard the seeking validation. That's another one that's a trigger word for me to think of. When you want that unconditional love, when you're seeking validation, what you're looking for is them to approve of your lifestyle, even if it is a toxic lifestyle. They need to love you and approve of it, even if it's toxic.
This is casting blame disguised as appealing to.
Oh, they know, they don't
asking for.
Yeah, I'm looking for love. I'm looking for validation.
Asking for validation, right? Okay, so looking at that now, that makes a lot more sense. And that kind of sucks.
Well, no, it
and I hope that what happens with him, I hope that look, this guy needs help. And I hope
so
that
too.
This guy, I hope that I hope that he goes actively seeking for it and actively finding actual help, rather than what it seems like here is a validation for actions that he has taken that are not necessarily healthy.
And I can say with experience, those are the phrases.
Or that may or may not be necessarily healthy. I don't know. I do not know if he is abusive.
We don't know him personally.
He has been
known
to be abusive, but a lot of this stems from a background of stuff. So maybe it's a possibility that he is too busy. This looks like a phrase from somebody. This looks like a statement from somebody who is too busy concentrating on what has caused the demons that he has, rather than trying to help solve the problems that are in front of him.
I think it's more deflecting the cause to other people instead of looking inward for the cause.
Yeah, he's looking to blame
somebody else.
He's looking to find the validation for his own habits, rather than trying to take care of the habits.
Yeah.
The habits are what are destructive, not the reason why they're there.
And the habits are...
Realizing why they're there helps you fight those things.
And more importantly, the habits are him. He is the cause of the habits. He's looking for an outside blame for the cause of the habits. And again, this is something that is a standard thing with people who suffer from any type of addiction. I mean, again, I'm only talking from my personal experience, and I understand that my personal experience is limited. There are people that in my life that I know that have had far more experience with people that have addiction issues than what I have.
Yeah. But
my experience seeing these things, my experience hearing about them, my experience dealing with what little I have dealt with, mm-hmm. these are all hallmarks of people who have an addiction of some form or another, mm-hmm. that are looking to blame it on somebody else. They because part of the addiction is escape. Part of the reason why people get addicted to things, they are altering their reality because they choose not to accept the reality that exists in front of them.
Absolutely.
And by one of the ways to alter that reality is to put the blame for everything that's wrong in it on somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's what those phrases kind of mean to me when I see the words unconditional love like that, when I see the words, especially followed right after seeking validation.
Yeah.
That is somebody who is looking for their lifestyle to be accepted regardless. And the simple fact is, people, your lifestyle dictates how people are going to judge you.
Yeah, totally.
And there's nothing you can do to get away from that. If you want people to judge you in a positive manner, live in what is considered a positive lifestyle. It's a choice. It is really a personal choice. It is. Now, addiction is something that helps to alter the ability to make that choice.
Yes.
But it is still a choice.
True.
So,
I would say one of the things that I'm noticing here is one of the patterns that I tend to find people that are within this mindset is that, first off, I'm not a psychiatrist. I've never taken a class on psychology or anything in my life.
I'm sure it would, wouldn't surprise you to know that I've taken a few.
Yes. You do have a bit of a history with it. Like, neither one of us are doctors here, obviously, but, one of the things that I'm kind of noticing here, and it's more of like a philosophy kind of thing that I like to tend to take. One of the things that I am very, adamant about in looking for, I'm always looking for why I do things that I do.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm obsessed with is, how does something work? Right.
Okay.
I'm always obsessed with how things work. It's why I go into engineering. It's why I'm into like video games. It's why I'm into like, you want to know it's not about being able to manipulate it, but it's about how I have an addiction to research.
Helping understand the function. Helps you understand the form.
Mentally, I also look at my own patterns and my own situations because I am looking for understanding.
Yeah.
I want to understand what or why.
Those are good things.
But there is a difference between seeking understanding and seeking validation.
There is, yes.
The problem is a lot of people with these issues, and this is somebody who, this sounds like a borderline issue. This sounds like there is some form of sociopathy that's happening here.
No, and in fact,
they're looking for, they confuse validation and understanding.
Actually, I can relate something to you. This is going to be delving a little personal.
Okay.
And I apologize if my sisters do listen to this, if they think that I'm delving a little too personal in this situation, because it's dealing with my mother.
Oh, okay.
And also apologies to my father, although you and I have had these discussions, but yes, I'm putting it out here on the podcast for people to hear. Most people, when I talk about the fact that my mother dying as unexpectedly as she did, it was literally, I woke up on a Thursday morning and got a phone call that she had passed away in the night.
Man.
And no idea that it was coming. So it was very much a shocking and surprising thing. And most people will have the same understanding or the same kind of reaction to the fact that, okay, you didn't get your chance for closure.
Right.
And part of the closure thing for most people is partially that validation thing.
Yeah.
And they are right in many extents. There are some things that I didn't get the opportunity to do with my mother, and most of them revolve around conversations.
Mm-hmm.
But they are not about validation from her. I had no need to get validation from my mother.
Right.
They were about trying to find out why she did the various things that she did as a mother to me, as a mother to my sisters, as a mother to my older brothers, why she made the decision she did, why she did the things, said the things, operated in the way that she did with so many different things. There were so many things that pop up in my brain, so many actions that happened, so many events that happened that I just had to wonder, what were you doing? Why were you thinking that? Where was your motivation? Some of them good.
Mm-hmm.
More often, they're the ones that are the negative moments in my childhood and my life that I was wanting to know, why did you do this? Did you understand how it made the other people feel? Did you know how it made me feel when you did this? Did you know how it made this person feel? What were you trying to get out of this? What were you trying to have happen as a result of what you did? Those are the type of questions, because I wanted to understand why she did the things that she did. that's what I lost from her dying when she did, dying so unexpectedly, is I never got the answers to why. I never got the understanding. I never got to fully get her motivation. I can infer a lot of her motivation. I got a lot of it from my dad by talking over many of these issues. At least what she had told him what her motivation was and what he understood, having been married to her for the years he was married to her, what he understood as her motivations. But I couldn't get it from her. Now, the conceit here is that I may, even if she had lived another, even if she was still alive now, so that would put her 7.5, 8 years beyond her, you know, her the time of death, I still may not have gotten any of the answers because she was not at a point in her life where she was ready to give me any of those answers. She wasn't ready to have those discussions with me. She wasn't ready for me to question what she had done as a parent. I can say it affected me as far as my parenting in that I wanted to make sure that everything I did with my kids, I was ready to answer for if they ever had questions about it. I was able to give justification and give the reasons why I did it. But that was where I didn't get the opportunity to understand for understanding. And that would have made a major difference in even if there were things that she did that I didn't agree with the doing of, at least maybe then I could understand why she did it, and I can accept that. And that's so I'm trying to hopefully you can kind of get where I'm coming from in that. That's kind of a similar idea to what you're trying to say is just the ability to understand things, to know the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah, that's the thing is the major thing that your philosophy like tends to tie in with mine, searching for understanding as opposed to validation.
Yeah.
You could have searched for validation from her instead. Your concern was not that.
No.
You didn't.
Same with my, and it's the same with my father. I'm not searching for my dad's validation in things. If he's proud of me.
No, and you're secure in yourself enough to not have to look for that.
I'm not doing things to make daddy proud. I'm glad if he's proud of things that I do, but it's not my motivation to do the things that I'm doing.
Right.
I have a great relationship with him, but a lot of that comes from us understanding. Were there things that he did as a dad that I wasn't entirely happy with? Yes, and he knows about them, and I know why he did the things that he did and the ways that he did it. I understand. I accept. I still absolutely love him for it. He did what he did based on the decision-making capability he had, but the fact that he was willing to discuss that with me, that gives me even more faith in him as my dad because he had the strength to admit places maybe where he didn't do as good as he could have or what his motivations were, so that he stripped himself bare a few times with some of the things he discussed. And it made a big difference to me. It made me feel even better about my relationship with him. It made me feel even more respect for him. That's how I operate, though. And not everybody necessarily does. But, okay, I have bad news. And that bad news being we don't get to talk about Antonio Brown because we are out of time.
Oh, no.
We're going to have to wait for Antonio Brown next time because we spent a lot talking about the Carters and hopefully some interesting points for mental illness. We hope we can help some people with that.
Yeah.
But so next time, even though it will be a little bit older, maybe with some more interesting things will happen with Antonio Brown between now and next week. I will be watching the NFL Network stuff, so I will know when it does. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. So for today, thank you for listening. Mike, where can people listen to us?
Well, you could check us out on our website, thezenuelchronicles.com or zencron.com if you don't want to type that much.
Or just type it one time and save it, bookmark it, something like that.
You could bookmark us as well.
Put it on your. Can't you do a thing where like you can put a direct link onto your like homepage of your computer or even on your phone?
Oh, like your desktop or something?
Yeah, on your desktop.
I think you can do URLs. I don't know. Probably, but there's so many other places you can listen to us at.
Where else?
Check us out at. Well, we are also on. You could follow us at Zencron on Facebook. And Twitter.
Please do.
Facebook and Twitter. It's spelled Xenchron. Also, we have our podcast available on multiple outlets. We are on Spotify. You can search us there. We are on TuneIn. We are on Google Podcast. You can search us at the Zenial Chronicles on any one of those platforms. Plus, if you want to see us on Apple Podcast or hear us on Apple Podcast, rather, just subscribe to the URL. There is a way to subscribe to URLs on Apple Podcasts, thezenuelchronicles.com/feed/podcast. Also,
that's a lot of typing.
You can see it is a lot of typing, but you can then, once you do it, It You're pops set. Up every time. Yeah, every time we have a new podcast, so
it's like
there.
Bookmarking it, basically.
Pretty Fantastic. Much. It's just like bookmarking it.
But what if people want to see podcasts that are older?
Older podcasts are actually held on our YouTube page.
YouTube.
So search for the Zennial Chronicles on YouTube, and our entire archive of all of our podcasts is on YouTube.
Even a few videos of us are on there.
There's one or two, yeah.
Yeah, you can actually see what we look like if you don't already know what we look like.
And when we have a new podcast that comes out on it or any other video updates, which we will be eventually concentrating on getting some actual videos out of different
videos
stuff.
Videos will be good at some
point. We will be expanding at one point. If you go to our YouTube page and you subscribe to us and then hit the bell icon for notifications, every time we put a video, you can do all notifications. You can do some notifications. There's a couple of different levels, but just hit that all notifications button. That way, yes. When a podcast comes out on YouTube, it's there. When we film a video and put it up, eventually we'll be doing that. That'll be there. You guys will get all of the TXC that you need.
And apparently we're still searching for, so please get your friends involved if you can. We're still searching to reach the 100 subscriber mark.
Yeah, we're not quite at 100 subscribers yet, but once we do that, we can get a custom URL, and then at YouTube we'll be... Well, I'm not going to announce it until we get it because I don't want somebody else to steal it.
Yes. we'll have our thing. But anyway, please feel free to comment on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter when things come out, but especially YouTube and Facebook. If you actually look at our YouTube videos and check the comments, we do reply back to the comments.
Yeah.
So we are more than glad to have conversations with you. Please tell us how we're doing. Please tell us what you think of our new format where we're talking about newsy stuff. Tell us if you like it or not.
Yeah. We'll like to discuss this kind of stuff a little bit more often, maybe be a little bit more valid on some stuff, more recently. But we'll still be talking about a lot of that nostalgia stuff, too.
So next week, for sure, we will talk about Antonio Brown. And maybe we'll have the other conversation, the great vape conversation.
I would think that'd be actually kind of fun. I think that's something to pull up.
All right. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.